Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to the Esme Murphy Show. I'm John Hinderacher, filling in for Esme tonight. We're having a fun show. We've been talking about traffic congestion in the Twin Cities, not that that's fun, and we're talking Minnesota politics. We had former Governor Tim Pawlenty on just before the last break, and we are waiting to be joined, I hope any moment now, by Congressman Tim Walz, who's one of the candidates on the DFL side. And then at the top of the or at the bottom of the hour, rather, we'll be joined by Commissioner Jeff Johnson, also seeking the GOP gubernatorial nomination and, in fact, the endorsed Republican candidate. We reached out also to Aaron Murphy and Lori Swanson, and they were not able to be with us tonight, but I'm hoping to catch up with them later in the summer. So it's a big year in Minnesota. The Republicans control both the House and the Senate, although the Senate control is teetering on the brink by one vote. But with the DFL in control of the governor's mansion, it's kind of a stalemate. And as a result, I think it's fair to say that not an awful lot got done in the last legislative session. I think the Republicans are hoping to capture the governorship so that they can move their agenda forward in a way that they couldn't with Mark Dayton in that office. And conversely, the Democrats are hoping that they can keep control over the governor's mansion and hopefully improve their standing in the House. The Senate, of course, is not up for election this year. So that's the political situation in a nutshell. Some people think that Minnesota's trending in a more Republican, more conservative direction. There's certainly some evidence for that, with Republicans controlling now both the House and the Senate, and with Donald Trump having come within a point and a half and a very surprising, to many at least, a surprising performance in 2016. And so we may be looking at a state that is in transition, and then again, we may not. Politics, particularly in this state, tends to be an ebb and flow back and forth, and neither party, it seems, is happy for too long, and neither party is in control for too long, and neither party seems to ever be, or rarely anyway, be in complete control. And maybe that's the way the voters like it. We're still waiting for Congressman Tim Walz to join us here. In the meantime, if you want to jump in and give us your thoughts, either on the current political scene or the congestion, transportation issues we've been talking about on the show, give us a call in the metro area, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. And in greater Minnesota, the toll-free number is 866, and then the same seven digits, 989-9226. And you can text us at 81807. We've gotten some pretty interesting texts over the course of the evening on the subject of transportation, which we talked about during the first hour. One listener texts, "Not a darn thing gets done without roads. I don't see any lumber, food, cement, contractors, utilities moving on the rail, buses, or bicycles." And that's true. It's a point that people often forget. You and I can potentially at least get on a bicycle and bike to the grocery store or whatever. But people who are transporting goods don't have that luxury, nor do they have the opportunity to transport them on light rail or buses. They really have to use vehicles, that is trucks. And so all of us are dependent on the roads and highways, not only for our own transportation, but for all the goods that we need every day. They got to get to us on the highways. And so I think a lot of people in the Twin Cities are really up in arms about the the fact that the congestion situation is bad here as it is. If you want to talk about that, or if you want to talk about the race for governor, like Rick in St. Paul on line one, just give us a call. Rick, you are on the air.
Yeah, I'd like someone to ask Tim Pawlenty, what's the difference between his tax plan if he became governor and the one that left us with a huge deficit and some neglect on a lot of infrastructure, with his idea of things is the way he wants to. Because if I recall, a lot of this infrastructure that needs to be repaired started to
I don't know about that. I mean, it was during the Pawlenty administration that there were significant additions made to our highways and roads, and as a result, congestion declined by about 10%. It really did ease traffic around the Twin Cities. So, as far as I know, quite a bit of work was done on infrastructure during that administration.
He also allowed a lot of like the education budget to be fall back, and the deficit went higher under him. So I was just wondering what the difference between his tax plan then versus now would be. I didn't hear a clear answer there.
Yeah, all right. I understand. There are folks who are fans of former Governor Tim Pawlenty, and there are folks who are not. You're obviously in the latter category. Shaletta, who have we got there on line seven? Okay, we now have Congressman Tim Walz on the line. Congressman, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Congressman, the DFL convention met a couple of weeks ago, and I'll be completely honest with you. To my surprise, it endorsed Aaron Murphy and not you. And now it's on to the primary. How big a factor do you think that endorsement is going to be in the primary race?
Well, it hasn't factored in on the DFL side for 48 years. Our endorsed candidate has not gone on to win the governor's office. I certainly respect the process, but I had said since I got in that I was running in a primary. I think it's just a much broader universe of voters. It's a much better opportunity to talk to Minnesotans when they're paying attention. So I think most Minnesotans, if you ask them, they have no idea this goes on. It's a pretty relatively small universe of voters. And so we're ready to go as we always were, and we're prepared for a primary.
Yeah, I think a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, Congressman, think it's time to change the kind of crazy system we've got of caucuses that don't really generate much of a result, followed by a very late primary. It's kind of the worst of both worlds.
I think that's right. I think the people who talk about a June primary, it makes more sense. I know the activists that get out there and they get engaged, and there's value in that, but it's pretty hard to ask people to go 4 or 5 weekends to spend $500, $600 for and go to, they're, once they get there, they're pretty sure they're coming out with an endorsement, and it kind of becomes an end in itself rather than a candidate.
Yeah, that certainly has been the history, especially on the DFL side. The DFL convention was very interesting this year. Obviously, a lot of excitement. One thing that came out of it was Lori Swanson pulling out of the attorney general race and instead announcing for governor. What impact do you think her involvement is going to have on the primary?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I always anticipated it would be more than two.
Say, Congressman, you're kind of breaking up there.
Having the resources necessary, and I think having the attorney general in, just brings that dimension to it. We're still, our message has always been about running for a more inclusive, a one Minnesota, bringing folks together, and so I guess it'll shake itself out amongst the electorate, but it doesn't really change anything we're doing.
What do you think are going to be the most important issues in the primary campaign?
Well, I think now that it's a broader audience, it becomes more about who can best solve these issues, who has the capacity to bring folks together. And I think on the Democratic side, one of the realizations we're coming to is both electorally and getting things done, Greater Minnesota matters. And this idea that there's a division between the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota, there's certainly differences, but our common core values, and we're going to have to work together. So I think the issue will come up about how do you bring folks together, and they're going to talk about, I'm sure it's the same, I would assume, relatively similar on the Republican side. People care deeply about, good quality schools. They care about access to affordable quality health care, safety in their communities. Those are the type of things. So I think that's where it goes.
How about the general election? Assuming that you get the nomination, Congressman, we don't know who the Republican nominee will be, but where do you think the sharp differences are going to be between you and the GOP nominee?
Yeah, well, I would assume if you think the state has been moving in a direction of being good in job growth, which we believe it is, being improving on the quality of our schools, I think those are the types of things where you'll start to look at someone like myself who can bring folks together. I talk about investing smartly. I talk about reforming and getting the most efficiencies we can out of government. And I think probably, to be very honest with you, those folks who are frustrated with what's happening with the current president will probably come that way. I would guess, Republicans will talk deeply about taxation. They normally do, which is a fair discussion to have. But I hope, this is my hope, is that all of these elections, it's hard to not be nationalized, angry, whatever. I hope that Minnesotans would be focusing on what can we do as a future? What does this Minnesota of 2050 look like? And what can we be laying the groundwork now, whether it be about a world that's going to be thirstier, a world that's going to need more energy, a hungrier world. Minnesota is positioned well to start talking about that, start talking about training that workforce of the future. So I hope that that's where it comes down to. I hope it's not just in a reaction to the national trends. We're making the case that this is focused on a Minnesota where everybody has an opportunity to have, chances to succeed. And that's where I hope this campaign goes.
We're talking with Congressman Tim Walz. Congressman, there was some controversy at the end of the last legislative session when Governor Dayton vetoed that tax conformity bill that had some modest tax cuts in it. Would you have signed that bill?
Well, and this is one, and I think it's a fair question to ask. The only thing I think that's maybe what I always say is it's pretty hard if you weren't in it where it was at. I think style-wise, I would hope I don't get to those positions. And I think, a 12-year legislative career of building bridges, getting folks together, if it turned out the way it was, probably as what governor was looking at, but I would like to think that's predicated on decisions that I think I would have been able to influence earlier on or work with folks earlier on. So it's a fair question. I think it's hard to give a straight answer if you weren't through the whole thing, but yeah, I think I would have. And I didn't support the tax bill in Congress for numerous reasons. One amongst is I know it's somewhat old fashioned, but I do believe deficits and debts matter, and you have to attack those. And I'm not sure that was well thought out.
Congressman, what's your position on mining in Minnesota?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, to recognize that mining has built a large portion of America. I reject these notions of false choices that it's environmentalism versus economic growth. I think you have to look at where the science is involved in each one of these situations. And when people lump them all together, I know the one that comes up now is PolyMet. My position has always been we need to have an honest discussion. Those metals, especially copper, are at the core of the clean energy economy. They're being mined in pretty horrific ways, both in terms of environmental and human toll that's taken on it. So I think there's a responsibility. If we're going to use copper, let's figure out where it's coming from. Let's follow the science. Let's make sure that we do all the environmental impact statements, the permitting, and then the liability piece in that. If we can do these things, then I believe there's potential, if anybody can, Minnesotans can, we should be able to pursue those, creating the economic opportunities, but more importantly, creating that future we keep talking about. I do believe strongly that we have to transition away from fossil fuels. That's not going to happen overnight, and it's going to take some of these metals. So that's the position I've taken, and I said it comes the same with pipelines. I voted for some when I felt that they were environmentally sound or needed to be done, and I voted against some. So I think you take them each on their merit. But the idea is that the growth that's created, whether it be mining, lumbering, or agriculture, that's new wealth created off the land. Once again, where Minnesota's well positioned, we just have to strike that proper balance.
Congressman Tim Walz, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll take calls. If you want to be heard on the political scene or the congestion situation, give us a call in the metro area at 651-989-9226. Greater Minnesota toll-free, 866-989-9226. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Esme Murphy Show. John Hinderacher filling in for Esme tonight. We've been talking Minnesota politics, and we've had a terrific show with more to come. We had former Governor Tim Pawlenty on as a guest. We had Congressman Tim Walz right before the last break. And after the next break at the bottom of the hour, I'm expecting to be joined by Commissioner Jeff Johnson. I think I mentioned earlier that we also reached out to Aaron Murphy and Lori Swanson for this show, and they were not able to participate, but I'm going to try to pick them up later in the summer as we continue to talk about current events in Minnesota, including but by no means limited to the political scene. So Minnesota is at a very interesting point in its political history. In its early years, it was dominated by the Republican Party, you know, the post-Civil War era. In more recent times, it tended to be dominated by the Democratic Party. And in recent years, it's really been back and forth, frequently with divided government, with the governor and control of at least one of the legislative chambers in opposite hands. And I think sometimes that's the way the voters actually like it. But that, in any event, is the way it's been a lot of the time in Minnesota in recent years. And the Republicans, I know, feel like they've got a good opportunity to really take control over Minnesota politics. They control the House. They control the Senate, albeit very narrowly by a single vote. Every special election for a Senate seat in the next 2 years is going to be hotly contested for that reason. And with Donald Trump having come within a point and a half of winning of carrying Minnesota in 2016 and really dominating in greater Minnesota. I know that there are a lot of Republicans who think it's a great opportunity with an open seat in the governor's mansion to elect the next governor and to control the levers of power, to control the governor's mansion as well as both the House and the Senate. Of course, whether that happens remains to be seen. It is a long way off, and it's going to be an interesting time between now and November. If you want to weigh in, give us a call in the metro area, 651-989-9226. Toll free in greater Minnesota, 866-989-9226. We had Congressman Tim Walz on just before the last break, and he made a point in a kind of subtle, oblique way that I think is important to his candidacy in the DFL primary. He talked about greater Minnesota, and he talked about rejecting the idea that there's a deep division between the Minnesota. And I know he views himself, I think he made clear that he views himself as the DFL candidate who can do the most to attract votes in greater Minnesota. If we look back at what happened in 2016 at the national level, the DFL obviously does not want to see the kind of Republican dominance outside of the Twin Cities that we saw 2 years ago. And I think one of Congressman Walz's chief planks in his platform, if you will, as he runs in the DFL primary, is the idea that he's the Democratic candidate who can do the most to bring in enough outstate or greater Minnesota votes to put him over the top. We heard from former Governor Tim Pawlenty, who talked about some of the issues, talked about some things he'll do differently the second time around, having learned from experience some years ago as governor. And we're going to go to a break now. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by GOP gubernatorial candidate, Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson. Welcome back to the Esme Murphy Show. I'm John Hinderacher, filling in for Esme tonight. And we are joined right now by Commissioner Jeff Johnson. Commissioner, thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Jeff, you won the Republican endorsement at the convention a couple of weeks ago, and you've worked hard for quite a while to build up support among the party's activists. How important do you think that endorsement is going to be as we move now into the primary season?
Oh, I think it'll be crucial, and I wouldn't have moved forward without the endorsement. I know some people disagree with this, but I think the endorsement has served us well in the Republican Party, and I think it's crucial to win in November to have a very united and energized base within the Republican Party. I think it's going to be very difficult to win without that. So I'm thrilled to have it. I think I've been to a lot of conventions, including 2002, when I stayed up all night to help Tim Pawlenty get endorsed. And I left this convention feeling better about where the party is from a unity standpoint than I've felt in a long time.
What sort of campaign do you intend to run between now and August? Is it going to be a primary-style campaign really focused on Republican primary voters, or do you expect to be more in a general election mode?
Yeah, I would say more in a general election mode, but it'll be a combination. Obviously, I got to win the primary, which is a hill to climb, and so we're going to focus where we go on where we think we'd find Republican primary voters. But the message is not going to change between pre-endorsement or pre-primary or the general. The message has been the same and will stay the same throughout.
You were the Republican nominee for governor 4 years ago, and you didn't do that badly against a sitting governor. I think you lost by about 5.5 points.
Yep.
Does that give you some confidence going into this year's race with an open seat?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, we haven't had a sitting governor who's a second term in like 50 or 60 years in Minnesota. It just seldom happens. And I went from about 15 or 16 points down to 5 points down. It wasn't enough. But as I'm traveling around the state, I've been in this race for over a year and talked to literally thousands and thousands of Minnesotans. There is such interest in change right now that I did not see 4 years ago. A lot of people were saying, hey, we don't want to change horses in midstream. But people want something different. And it's people from across the political spectrum. This is not a real partisan thing. They are just tired of the way government seems to be ignoring people, where our state agencies seem to believe that their job is to tell everybody else how to live their lives as opposed to serve the people who pay their salaries. And that gives me great hope that the message I'm sharing can prevail both in August and in November.
Now, there was a news story just a day or two ago, Commissioner, that indicated that Governor Tim Pawlenty is well ahead in the fundraising race so far. How important do you think that is?
You know, money is important in elections without question, but anybody who believes that it is the end-all be-all has not been paying attention for the past decade or so, and certainly not the past handful of years. And I will be fine, but my big money is going to come in after the primary, just as it did 4 years ago. We raised a couple of $1 million in a few weeks after the primary. Tim's money is coming in early. Mine's going to come in late. So we'll be fine there. But I think more importantly, if anybody is going to rely upon amassing a war chest in the primary as opposed to getting out there and engaging voters and having a grassroots army all over the state, I think it's a big mistake. And I think that is a big difference in how Tim and I are running our races.
I may be in the minority here, I don't know, but obviously you need some resources. You can't win without getting your message out. But it seems to me that especially in the last couple of election cycles, being able to pay for a whole lot of TV advertising isn't necessarily the key to victory.
Right. No, it isn't. And, you know, we have spending limits in this state. And actually, if you look at where I'm at compared to Tim Walz, he has more cash on hand. He doesn't have a ton more cash on hand. I'm actually going to have an advantage over him because he's spent so much to raise the money he has. I'm going to be able to spend more in the general. And I agree with you. Having enough money to get a message out there is primary and well for the general. But again, it's kind of the Jeb Bush strategy from 2016. Let's just amass the biggest war chest and rely on name recognition and don't really engage voters. It just doesn't work very well anymore.
As you know, Commissioner, Minnesota has one of the higher tax burdens of any state. Different studies measure it a little bit differently. Maybe we're sixth, maybe we're eighth, but we're definitely one of the highest overall tax burdens. If you get elected governor, are you going to try to reduce that tax burden? And if so, how?
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. And frankly, that is the difficulty, is trying to choose where you start cutting taxes, because I think we're in the top eight in almost every single major tax category. There's a couple where we're in the teens. My greatest focus, my top focus, will be on the income tax, particularly the lower levels of the income tax. I think we need to cut all of them. But when you look at our lowest income tax rate, our lowest rate is actually higher than the highest rate in 23 other states, which is absolutely insane. So we're not just taxing to death CEOs in Minnesota. We're taxing to death school teachers and mechanics and bartenders and daycare workers. And that has to be the first thing we fix. And it will be. I get asked all the time, what's the first thing you'll do as governor? And I used to say, I'll fire the Met Council. But that's actually now the second thing I'm going to do. the first thing I'm going to do as governor is try to fix the mess that Mark Dayton made by vetoing a bill that at least helped a little bit with our tax burden.
Well, and also conformed our tax system to the changes in the federal law. It's going to be a nightmare for Minnesota taxpayers come April.
Absolutely. And that is, again, that goes back to the frustration that I'm hearing all over this state where government doesn't seem to care how their actions are affecting real people. And this veto that Dayton threw out there a couple weeks ago, he didn't really even have a reason for it other than politics. And what it's going to do is it's going to make life absolutely miserable for millions of people in this state because it's going to be impossible to get your taxes done. And a lot of people are actually going to see tax increases when the federal government actually cut taxes. It's crazy.
It's unfortunate. One of the topics we talked about earlier in the program, Commissioner Johnson, was traffic congestion in the Twin Cities. As governor, is that something that you can impact? And if so, what do you propose to do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the first thing I'm going to do with respect to that is instruct my Department of Transportation that they need to focus on congestion. Right now, they have essentially decided, I think they announced this a couple of years ago, that congestion is not a priority for them anymore. What's the priority is offering up different avenues for people to travel other than cars when most people rely upon cars to get where they want to go. And I happen to believe that we should be serving taxpayers and helping them do what they need to do to make their lives work rather than trying to change their behavior. And so we'll start with actually focusing on congestion relief, and that means you prioritize your spending. Rather than spending $2 billion plus on a light rail line that is not going to relieve congestion in any meaningful way, and then tens of millions a year to subsidize the thing, let's take that money or some of that money and put it into roads that people rely upon to get to where they want to go. It's really a matter of prioritizing.
Where do you stand on mining in Minnesota? Some of these projects up north seem to be coming to a head. What's your position?
You know, we're sitting on a literal gold mine. Oh, gold mine's not the right word because it's not gold, but we have minerals up there that no one else in the world has, or at least almost no one else in the world has. Certainly no one else in the United States has. And we are playing political games with something that could provide a great service to people and also create great private sector jobs in an area of the state where they are desperate for good jobs. And so the fact that we are slow walking this and that we are letting regulations, we're actually not allowing businesses to go through the normal regulatory process. We have a tough regulatory process to protect our environment, and I'm okay with that. But what I'm seeing right now is government playing games with that regulatory process so that as businesses should be working through that to create jobs, we're standing in the way. I'm going to be an advocate for this as governor because I truly believe that we can do this, that the private sector can create great jobs up there in a way that protects the environment.
We're talking with Commissioner Jeff Johnson, the third of the candidates for governor that we've talked with tonight. Commissioner, I want to just give you the last word and ask you to take a minute or so to tell our listeners why you think you should be our next governor.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And just to fill everybody in, I'm the endorsed Republican candidate. I'm in a primary with Tim Pawlenty, and then whichever of us wins that, we'll go on to the general. And, you know, my message and my, I think, distinction, one of my distinctions with Tim is that I don't believe this is a time for business as usual. I don't believe this is a time for more of the same or tinkering on the edges. We need fundamental generational change in government. We need to change the very culture in St. Paul from that of telling everybody how to live their lives or spend their money or run their businesses to actually serving the people who pay their salaries. And I think I'm the only one in this race from either party who's going to bring that fundamental change to government.
Commissioner Jeff Johnson, thank you very much for being with us. We are going to go to a break now, and when we return, we'll take your calls. In the metro area, that's 651-989-9226. In greater Minnesota, toll-free, 866-989-9226. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Esme Murphy Show. John Hinderacher filling in for Esme tonight. This is the last segment of tonight's show, and so we're going to go to the phone lines. If you want to be heard, give us a call in the metro area at 651-989-9226. In Greater Minnesota, toll-free at 866-989-9226, or you can text us at 81807. Let's go to Dan in St. Louis Park on line one. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, John. Hey, you know, it seems to me that it's more than ever before a huge ideological difference between Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats seem to really have moved so far left, as evidenced on our campuses across the country, which almost seem fascist and Marxist, and that seems, it's very concerning to me, but, which brings to the point, why can't we, for a very affordable price, get your degree solely online except to show for doing oral reports or taking exams? These huge universities that waste millions and millions of dollars on buildings and maintenance and a lot of degree programs that are just more politically correct than actually practical. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Don't you think a guy should be able to get a degree and get most of your general education requirements done for just a fraction of the cost?
Short answer, Dan, is yes. You know, education is a big and complicated topic, but I guess I would say a couple of things, Dan, in response to your comments. Number one, I think too many of our young people are oriented to the idea that they've got to go to college, they've got to get a four-year degree in order to be successful in life. It just isn't true. And in fact, there are a lot of terrific career options that don't require four-year degrees, that require specialized job training, which, of course, is what most employers are really looking for. And so I think when we talk about education, for me, the starting point would be we need more emphasis on job skills readiness and less emphasis on the idea that everybody's got to go to college, whether he really necessarily wants to or not.
But,
you know.
But even the taxpayer is subsidizing so many stupid, foolish degree programs that really just suck money away from the taxpayer.
Yeah, I think, I think it's very difficult to justify the cost of higher education. One of the things going on, I think, is that the federal government has made easy loan money available, and what that does, what it tends to do, is to jack up the price. You know, the more money that the consumers have to spend, the more the universities, raise their prices. And so what we're now seeing is a lot of young people graduating from college with a crushing load of debt, and they may or may not have any real career prospects or job prospects. So, I think your point, Dan, I never really got back to your original point, which was about efficiency in higher education.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, college is great. I loved it, you know, but we're looking at a model that goes back how many centuries? You know,
right.
I mean, it goes way, way back into the past. And the idea of gathering in groups of 20 or 30 or maybe 100 or whatever it might be to listen to lectures each day and so forth is not really the most efficient way of communicating information. And
a lot of the information is not actually useful. It's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I just think so much of it is Norwegian studies or something.
Dan, come on, man.
Okay.
You're talking to
I'm
a proud
Norwegian,
Norwegian American.
I'm okay. I can talk a little Norse even. But I'm just saying, and it's sad. You kids drive to the U, they got to find a place to park. They pay for a parking permit. They walk to class, sit in a huge auditorium in a building that's vacant. A lot of the day and the evening is vacant. And it seems so archaic.
Well, I think archaic is a good word for it. And by the way, you know, Tim Pawlenty, when he was governor, was kind of a visionary about some things. And one of those things was exactly what you're talking about, efficiency in education and the idea that we can do a lot more online. We can do a lot more at a far, far lower cost. And the fact is we're going to have to. I think we're getting to the point where more and more young people and their parents are rebelling against the dollars that they're being expected to shell out, and oftentimes, having a lot of concern about the quality of the product. So, Dan, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jim in St. Paul on line two. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. You know, I just want to say one thing about Governor Dayton vetoing that that bill, and he's getting criticized for. It was a bill that was huge. It was like 900 and some pages, and they brought it out 15 minutes ahead of time. But in that bill, there were 117 different poison pills, if you will, of things that were really rotten that they put in there, the Republican legislature put in there. They took 70 out the next day because they themselves knew how onerous that was. That left 47 more. So when he vetoed that bill, he didn't veto it to make life miserable for taxpayers or anybody else. It was the fact that, and this happened three times in a row, where the Republicans put in these poison pills.
Let me just pause you for a second there, Jim, because I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. What's the number one poison pill on the list?
You know, there's so many. And there's
no, but let's just talk about the big ones. What would be at the top of the list, number one?
Well, myself, I can't tell you. I don't know. But I know if he said that, there was stuff in there that you know, had to be bad. I mean,
well, Jim, did he say that? I mean, what I saw Governor Dayton saying.
John, he did say that.
Yeah. Now, Jim, you may be right. But what I saw Governor Dayton saying was that he vetoed the bill, even though it was, you know, it was really necessary to bring Minnesota tax law into conformity with the changes in the federal law. But what I saw Governor Dayton saying was that he vetoed it because it was a giveaway to the rich. Does that make sense to you?
Well, that might have been part of it. But what I'm saying is if you pay attention to this the way I do, and believe me, I follow politics night and day and always have, and being retired, I've got time to do that. When I say poison pills, it's something in there that wouldn't be right. You just take a look at what's happened in the federal government. The federal government is totally unable to do anything now because we've got a president that lies continuously.
Well, they cut our taxes. I mean, that's one thing they did.
Did they cut your taxes very much? They didn't. It maybe made $5 difference for me.
All right, Jim. Listen, hey, Jim, I deduce from your comments that you're a DFLer, which is just fine. That's terrific. Who's your candidate in the primary? Have you decided yet who you're going to vote for or whether you're going to vote in the primary?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to pass that up. I think I'd vote for Lori Swanson.
And why do you say that? And I wish, by the way, that the Attorney General could have been with us tonight. She couldn't make it. I'm hoping to catch her on a show later in the summer. What is it that you like about her candidacy?
I think she's very honest. She's very smart. And she picked a real good running mate.
Yeah, that was really interesting, wasn't it? Rick Nolan, retiring from Congress, is now running for lieutenant governor in tandem with Lori Swanson. Do you think that's going to sway some primary voters?
You know, I don't know. I hope so. I like all the Democrats. I don't have any. You know, I don't have anything against any of them. And on the Republican side, I kind of like that Jeff Johnson. I think he's at least a moderate.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you hear him on the show tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, he was on just before the break. Okay, well, hey, listen, Jim, thank you very much for calling. It was great to chat, and you have a good night. Well, we're not quite to the end of the show. We got just a couple of minutes left before we got to wrap it up. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. In the couple of minutes that we have left, I want to just return to a topic that we touched on with several of the gubernatorial candidates, but didn't have time to explore in detail, and obviously we won't have that time now either, and that's mining. Because one thing that I think ought to be a significant issue in November for candidates for governor as well as candidates for the legislature is their attitudes, their views toward mining in northern Minnesota. The organization that I run, which is called Center of the American Experiment, is about to put out a major paper on Minnesota mining, and it's going to be the cover story in the upcoming issue of Thinking Minnesota, our quarterly magazine. And what that paper is going to point out is that, among other things, is that developing mineral resources in northern Minnesota can add more than $3 billion a year to Minnesota's gross domestic product and will help to create more than 8,000 jobs, not just in northern Minnesota, but all over the state, high-paying jobs. And one of the interesting things about it is that the minerals that we're talking about mining in northern Minnesota, things like copper and nickel and cobalt, are vitally important for things like cell phones. You can't make a cell phone without those minerals. And so if we're going to use those minerals, what better place to mine them, what safer place to mine them than Minnesota? Well, that's going to be it for tonight. I'm John Hinderacher filling in for Esme Murphy, and I'll be with you again soon, I hope. Have a good night.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.